Good evening, everybody. And before I start the talk, and I would like to ask one question. And I just want to know, I just want to ask one question that those who don't like to be happy, please put up your hand. There's no one put up the hand, so we all want to be happy, isn't it? So today's the topic is happiness. One of the reasons that I choose this topic because of the developments of this wisdom and the attainment of enlightenment, and actually it's very much depending on developing this happiness. You see, the happiness comes first. This path, you need to have the happiness to develop this wisdom and to attain this enlightenment. And actually, the Buddha, he was really well aware that, you know, every single being just want to be happy and the desirous of happiness. That's why he's very skillfully redirect this natural tendency in a way that lead to real happiness. The whole path of practice is happiness, and it's not just by mere wishing that may I be happy. If you want to be happy, you have to take up the whole path of practice that the Buddhas laid down. The whole path of practice is not by just wishing. And sometimes you have to be careful, you know, with what we wish for. We wish to be happy, and then sometimes you think that I could have this, I could have that, and I'd be happy if I have, you know. Sometimes even we get what we want, we may not be happy. And sometimes the thing that we wish for that really causes us a problem. And this is really remind me of one of the jokes that about a wish, you know. And this American man, he went to a cafe with this email, you know, the big bird, and they went in there, and they went into the cafe. And this man ordered a burger and chips and a Coke. And he turned around to ask the big bird, "What do you want?" And the big bird said, "The same." So, okay. So he orders the same two burgers, two Cokes and chips. Then the waitress ran away and he came back with burgers, Cokes and chips. He said, the waitress said, "Okay, it's 9:48. So this man put his hand into the pocket. He put exactly the amount, 9:48. So he went away, and then continuously for 2 weeks, he went in there, he ordered the same thing, a burger, chips, and Coke. And each time, he just put in his hand into the pocket, and he got the same amount, 9:48. And then after 2 weeks, he went to the cafe again, and the waitress said, is it the same thing? You're going to have a burger, chips, and Coke. He said, no, today's I have a bit different. Today I'm going to order a steak, baked potatoes, and some salad." And he turned around and asked the big bird, "What do you want?" He said, "The same." So the waitress went away and bring him a steak, baked potatoes, and some salad. Then he said, "It's 21:32. So this man put his hand into the pocket. He put out exactly the amount, 21:32. Of course, this waitress couldn't hold her curiosity. He said, "How come, you know, each time you come, you be able to have the exact amount? How, you know, I just couldn't, you know, why you be able to do that?" So he said, "Because some times ago, I started to clean my attic, you know, and I found an old lamp, you know, oil lamp, and he started to clean the lamp, and a genie came up and granted him two wishes. So the first wishes, then he said, my first wishes is that I have always have enough money to pay whatever I need, whatever I want. So whatever, you know, whether it's just a carton of milk or a Rolls Royce, you know, or $1 million, a house or anything, then the waitress said, oh, it's really brilliant, you know. You didn't ask for $1 billion or $1 million, and you asked for, you know, then you never run out, you know. You always have money to pay what you want. So he asked, what is your second wish? Then this man started to sigh. My second wish was a chick with long legs and always agree with what I said. So they say sometimes you think that this is what you want, and sometimes some people wish for a car, and that is the car, then they met an accident, that they really, that this is the things that kill them. So then actually, if you want to be happy, it's not just by wishing. You have to take up the whole path of practice. And then we are very lucky and very fortunate we have this Buddha's teaching. The Buddha's lay out the whole path of practice, how to be happy. And they show us the way. And the Buddha did, you know, mention, emphasize about how to, what are the happiness that we should develop and what type of happiness that we should be avoided. Because some of the happiness that if we develop will cause us suffering, that not really lead us to happiness. You know, give us some gratifications, but it's not really give us to, you know, real happiness. And some happiness that, you know, we pursue that kind of type of happiness will really bring us happiness and freedom and enlightenment. So the Buddhas mentioned two types of happiness. The first type is the unwholesome happiness. So the Buddha said this is unwholesome. It's unwholesome, it doesn't mean that it's bad, you know, or evil. It's unwholesome because it leads us to suffering. It's not that it's bad. Because of this unwholesome happiness is in relation to sensual pleasure. This sensual pleasure, and because of and this unwholesome, this type of happiness reflects is a potential relationship to relation to this underlying tendency to lust. It leads to attachment. You know, you have this underlying tendency, and this underlying tendencies, you know, it should be strengthened and activated, and we engage this sensual pleasure, so it becomes stronger and stronger, and it leads to attachment, and we're not fulfilled. So the Buddha said that this type of happiness we should be avoided. We should not pursue this type of happiness. So this happy, it's not that we have to torture ourselves, you know, and not, you know, we can enjoy a cup of tea, your coffee, your meal. It's not that, you know, to have to do all these self modifications and ascetics practice. But what the Buddha means is the indulgent in the sensory pleasure, because it leads to the mind, you know, you don't stay focused. Because you keep, you know, they activate our tendency, then it becomes stronger and stronger. And just like myself, like I wasn't born as a nun, you see, I've been through life, you know, and I know how is it like, you know. The reason why I become a nun, because of when I started to meditate, when I started to experience the inner peace and inner happiness, then I realized that this type of happiness that really bring me lots of satisfactoriness. I have this satisfaction, you know, with this type of happiness. Because when I was a lay person, I spent so much time, you know, going to the beauty salon, you know, spend hours doing my hairstyle, painting my nail, and, you know, I do all sorts of, you know, all those stuff, you know, and it doesn't bring me any inner peace and happiness. But only when true, you know, that meditations, that I experience the inner peace and inner happiness. But before that, because I don't have other option, this is the only option I know, through the senses, you know, to going to the best food, to get a nice dress, you know. And that that time I haven't have other option. That's that this is the only option that I know that to gain happiness. So when I have the experience of that, another type of happiness is not depend on the senses. It's not do not depends on the object, you know, outside ourselves. It's within ourselves, and it's really give me a lot of satisfaction. And I feel it's so full, and it's give me lots of this happiness is different. And this is the happiness of peace, happiness of calm. And the Buddha encouraged another type of happiness to be developed. That is the happiness of, this is the wholesome happiness. This wholesome happiness do not, you know, relate to the sensual pleasure. You know, it's not come from the sensual pleasure. It's come from not relate to this sensual pleasure. So it's like, for example, the happiness come from listening to the Dharma. Like all of you here, even though it's raining, you choose to come here. And this kind of happiness is different because it's not come from the senses. It gives you a lot of, you feel inspiring, you feel uplifted. And this type of happiness that Buddha encourages us to pursue, this type of happiness. And the happiness of doing a good deed, a wholesome deed. For example, practice generosity. Like generosity is not only like giving material things, like an act of kindness. And this is the happiness that do not rely on the senses. This is the wholesome happiness the Buddha encourages to pursue. And the happiness that by keeping the precepts, you know, to be a virtuous person, the morality. So because the morality is very important, because the morality is a foundation for the peaceful mind and calm mind. So we develop this skillful way of living, skillful way of speaking. And the whole Buddha's path of practice is to, we take a total responsibility, moral responsibility on one's behavior and one's speech. So we do not blame that, you know, we have that, you know, nowadays everybody, they blame their parents, they blame the government, they blame the society. They don't want to take any responsibility because it's easy to blame other people that, you know, you don't have to take responsibility. There's this whole path of practice. We have to, we ourselves have to be responsible for our own happiness. So we have to take up the whole path of practice because it's easy to rely on like outer's help. Some people like that, they like to just to believe like some rituals, they do some rites and rituals, they do something, and then they thought that magically will help them, you know, and to attain what they want and the happiness, you know, and it's easy because you don't have to do the work. You don't have to put in the effort, and that is not, you know, the happiness will not just arise out of just like perform some rites and ritual, and we think that this, you know, magically will just help us, you know, to be happy, and we don't have to do anything, and that is easy. That's why I sometimes it make me feel surprised that why people just, you know, believe that, you know, that perform certain rites and rituals and they'd be happy. And some even very highly educated people, and they believe that. And I was really amazed how people still believe that. And it's just like, it's just like, I just remind me another jokes, you know, that we want to things that happen magically, like we don't have to work towards it. And this is about a family. That's the parents, the wife and husband, and the son. They come from a very remote area, and they never been to this shopping mall, you know, before. So the first time they've been to this shopping mall, so they wander around. So they walk from the first floor to the second floor and then to the third floor. And especially the husband, when he was he's all in a certain, he saw there is something very, you know, really attract his attention. He saw there's something really like a magic, it's a magic door. He saw a magic door open and close and open and close. So he stared and looked at this magic door. Then that time that the when the door opened, and this is the lift, and this one of these very frail lady, old lady on the wheelchair. So she went into the lift and she pressed the button, and when he did, then he go to the from the third floor to the second and to the first the ground floor, and then she went out. Then after that, there was another lady, you know, young, beautiful lady, and she came in, and she went into the lift, and she went, then she go to the first floor, from the first floor to the second to the third. Then here she go. The door opened, the lift opened, and this man saw this, you know, wonderful, beautiful young lady, and he was just stunning. Then he just turned around and talked to the son, "Quick, quick, go and get your mom." So he thought that this magic door, you know, can transform, you know, the mother, the wife to become a beautiful lady. This is how we think that we do certain, you know, rites and rituals to help us, you know, to transform our happiness to be a happy person. No, we have to take up the whole path of practice. And that's why it's important we need to know what type of happiness that we need to pursue, what type of happiness that we to be avoided. So the core teaching of the Buddhas, that is the Four Noble Truths. And maybe when we talk about Four Noble Truths, and it's like, it's about suffering. But actually, the Four Noble Truths is pointing to happiness. The first Noble Truth, that is, the translate is suffering, that's life is inherently unsatisfactory. So no matter what we do, because if we don't understand what is suffering, we will not understand what the happiness. We will not look for the cause of suffering. We will not look for the why, where is the suffering come from. So the first thing we need to understand, the first noble truth, life is inherently unsatisfactory. I remember last year, Vesak, and I was being asked questions, you know, because that we have a topic regarding the euthanasia, like whether to see our loved one, you know, suffer, or to, you know, to terminate their life. And this is not something that is a very controversial topic. And someone asked about how to keep the first precept, non-harming. You know, he said that I remember one gentleman, he said that the first, he's got the first dog when he was having the first dog having this terminal illness, having cancer, and he put the dog down. After that, he regret. He said that he shouldn't have done that. He think that it's not right to put the dog down. After that, the second dog also having terminal illness. So this time he decided not to put the dog down, but he realized that he feel that it's still not right. Because the dog suffer a lot, like he's still going to die, and he suffer. And he said, how to keep the rules not harming? And another person said they have the problem with termites, you know, how, because they're going to eat up my house, and how to practice non-harming, and how to solve this solution, you know, how to solve this problem. Then I was being asked to answer this question. Then my answer was, there is no easy solution. Because we live in this world, in the samsara, and no matter what we do, we cannot avoid, you know, to live on the expense of others. We are not going to get it right, but we can do our best. The only way that we can get out of this cycle of rebirth is not to be reborn. So the very important we understand that it's part of life. Whatever we do is not going to be perfect. You know, that is part of life. That's why it's very important we understand that it's only part of life. Then when we understand that, then we change our attitude, how we look at life. You know, instead of, you know, how we relate to life. It's very important. And it's actually how the positive attitude to relate to life, to how to look at life. And I remember that when I was still a teenager, so I used to have the kind, I used to have this attitude, like, you know, it's not that I'm being denied. So I was, to me, like, you know, I have to live until I die. So I must live happily. So whenever things that, you know, that's really things that unhappy and things that irritate me, so then I just tell myself, why I want to remember things that, you know, cause me suffering and pain. And it's not that I try to deny, but, you know, it's no point to just holding on to that. So I might as well remember, even I have to remember something, I might as well remember something that is good, that make me feel happy. That's why this is very important, how we relate to life, because we can't change. This is part of life. No matter how we do, we're not going to get it right. And I like one of these stories about this this In the Sense comics, you know, about a bhikkhuni, because it's a bhikkhuni. And she tried to, you know, she tried to get things right, to be perfect, because the Buddha said life is inherently unsatisfactory. It's not going to be perfect. And she's and this story goes like that. This bhikkhuni, she's living in a cave. And one day when she went back, she found that her robe's been eaten by the rat. So she need to patch her robe. Then after she patched her robe, and next day again, you know, the rats, you know, the rope's been eaten, and she need to patch again. And she get fed up that she need to patch the ropes, you know, each time she patch it, and then it's get a hole, they have a hole again, and then she have to do it again and again. So she tried to solve the problem, like, you know, that she don't have to worry about patching her rope. Then someone suggested that she get a cat. So with the cat to chase so that she don't have the rat, then she don't have to patch her rope. But because of she had the cat, then she had to get the milk, you know, every morning to get milk for the cat. And it's also a problem. Every day have to find milk for the cat. Then in order to get the milk, you know, to feed the cat, and the cat to chase away the rat, and she didn't have to patch her rope. Then after that, and she find that it's too troublesome, you know, to have to find the milk for the cat. Then someone suggested that she got a cow, got her own milk. So she got a cow to produce the milk for the cat, so that the cat chase away the rat, and she didn't have to patch her rope. After that, it's because we have the cows, she have to be very busy every day to look for grass, the grass to feed the cow every morning. And she's ended up so busy. So people suggested that she got a piece of land, you know, so that she don't have to go to look for grass to feed the cat, to feed the cow, you know, to produce the milk for the cat, and the cat to chase away the rat, and she don't have to patch a rope. So, and with the big piece of land, and she have to look after the land. So then she had to get someone to look after the land. Then she got a young man to look after the land, you know, to look after the land and to provide this grass for the cow, and the cow provide milk for the cat, and the cat, you know, chase away the rat, and she didn't have to patch a rope. And she's ended up so busy whole day, you know, to look after, you know, the property, and because you have to have to look after the young boy, to look after the cow, the land. And she ended up the whole day busy. This is how we thought that we solve one problem. Actually, we create another problem. And that is part of life. It's not going to be perfect. No matter what we do, it's not going to be perfect. That's why it's very important that how we relate to life. It's not that what is really happening to us is a problem. It's how we look at life, how we relate to life. So whatever we do, and we look at it, we are willing to look at it, that we understand that this is part of life, then there's a lot of things that is not a problem. Sometimes we create a problem. And like this bhikkhuni, and then she realized that, you know, she causes more problems. She's ended up no time to meditate. And she gave up. She might as well patch a rope. It's much easier. You know, sometimes we think that we solve this problem, we'll be happy ever after, so we solve the problem. No, it's not going to have. It's not going to work that way. So when we understand that, sometimes we create a lot of unnecessary suffering for ourselves and for others. So we accept it, that it's part of life. And sometimes, like I've been asked, you know, like some people like being put in the very difficult situation. Like whatever decision that you make, it's not going to be easy. And how we deal with this situation? So the only we can do our best. So there is no right or wrong decisions. I remember a few months ago, my son, he spoke to me. He I think more than a few months, I think almost a year, when he spoke to me, he just wanted to change. He wanted to move from the other city to the hometown to start his own business, but he wasn't sure whether this is the right thing. And of course, he will ask my, you know, his decision. Then, as usual, I always throw the ball back to him. I said, you make the decision. And I told him that, you know, that is, if you understand the Buddha's teaching, the most basic Buddha's teaching, that is everything happen out of condition. It's not like out of nowhere. So all multiple causes and conditions. So I told him that the decision that you make is only part of the whole thing. You know, whatever happened, there are many causes and conditions. So only your decision is only contribute part of that. So and sometimes we think that when things goes on the things goes the way we would like it to be, you know, goes well. So we think that we make the right decision. Actually, it's not. I said we don't know. And then when things that don't go well, then we think that we make a wrong decision. But the decision we make is just contribute part of the whole, you know, whole things, you know, that's happened. That's why you have to, if you understand that, we just, you know, relax. And sometimes we tend to worry unnecessarily. I remember when I decided to become a nun, then I stopped. I have a small business, then I decided to stop my business. So when I stopped my business, then I still have to rent the place to keep my machinery. And I have to pay, you know, rent each month, but no income. And I haven't think of a way to solve my problem. Then I started to plan to go to Thailand to practice. And my ex-husband, He couldn't stand. He said that I just don't understand you, and I just don't understand what sort of person you are. You haven't solved your problem. Now you're planning to go to Thailand to practice. You still have this problem that your thing haven't been sold yet, and you have to pay rent each month. And I told him, I said, you know, because I haven't think of a way to solve the problem. And it's no point that I'm worrying about it. If I worry about it to help me to solve the problem, then I worry about it. So I said, I just leave it alone. I said, I put it aside. Then I just think, sometimes we think that we got to solve the problem. You know, we don't have to. Sometimes when your mind is confused, you can't find the solution. So you just leave it alone, put it aside. And make your mind as peaceful as possible, then you go back to it. And eventually I solve the problem. They say sometimes how we want to control the situation. And this is the second noble truth. The cause of the suffering is come from the sense of self. That is the craving to be and craving not to be. So the things that we like, we hold on to it, and this is very subtle. The Buddha's talk about the three craving. The first one is the desires, like we crave for things. That is the causal level. That is not too difficult to work with. The most difficult is the craving to be and craving not to be, the sense of self, the ego. And that is always the problem. And the Buddha always encourages us to look at whenever we have problems, we suffer, we have pain, we investigate, we look at it. And not to think that the problem is because of this person, because of that person, to look at our reaction. Why we react? Where is the suffering come from? I remember when I was in Thailand, I stayed in one of these nunnery. And I just arrived there a few days. I didn't like this place. I was very critical and very judgmental. And I don't like the practice there. And I think that the nuns there is too superstitious, and they perform lots of rites and ritual. And I was very critical and very judgmental. And I was asked, like morning, to collect the flowers, the small flowers, very small flowers. And they use it to dry it and like to make medicine. I don't like it because I was thinking that I come here to practice, I come here to get enlightened. I'm not come here to work. And my mind was just complaining and complaining all the time because, in Thailand, it's a lot of mosquitoes, and I have to squat down to pick up the flowers. It's very tiny. And it's so tired because I can't squat down too long. And I was bitten by the mosquito in my face, you know. I was just so angry, so upset, and I just keep complaining. I said, oh, this stupid place, I really don't like this place. I don't like to do all this, so I'm not coming here to work, you know. If I come here to work, I must go back to lay life. I can, you know, I can earn money, you know. Here, I just caused myself so much suffering. Then I decided, next morning, I run away. So after breakfast, I quickly ran back to my kuti so that the nuns couldn't get hold of me. So I ran away. So I ran away for 2 days. So avoid not to pick up the flowers. Then after 2 days, I said, hang on a minute. What are you doing? I asked myself, what are you doing? And I said that, you know, and deep inside I know it's not right. But come from the sense of self, the ego, because I was very critical and judgmental, you know, judging this nun, thinking they're not really practiced well, they're too superstitious, you know, and I don't like this place. Actually, I was thinking, oh, I'm going to leave. I'm not going to stay here. This place is really no good. And I started to look at my reaction. Like, and I started to investigate, where is this suffering coming from? Is it coming from outside? Is it coming from there? Actually, the suffering is much more to come from my reaction, react towards the situation. And I started to look at it. Then I started to ask myself, if I'm not happy this moment, will I be happy the next moment? Will I be happy if I leave this place? So happiness is not a destination. Happiness is a journey. You know, it's not that something that you reach. You know, we always think that the happiness is out there, something we reach. But this moment, then, because sometimes when we suffer, we don't investigate. We investigate where's the suffering come from. Then I realize that actually it's come from my sense of self, my ego, the bad ego. Then I said, okay. And I remember, and just before that, I remember, because I listened to one of Ajahn Brahm's talks. Ajahn Brahm said, you do things that you don't like. So I remember, yes, okay, I don't like it, I do it. So the next morning, I went to this nun, you know. And I wait for her. I wait for her. I stand there, I wait for her. I said, good morning. I said, can I help you to pick up the flowers? So she said, yes. Then I started to pick up, and of course I started to feel like, because it's unpleasant because of how we want the comforts, physical comforts, you know. Then I started to, then I keep telling myself that be patient, I practice patient. So I just, my mantra is to be patient. So and then after a while, actually I quite enjoy doing that, like that's gone. Then actually I realized that actually doing it is not so much the suffering. Actually, the complaining about it is much more the suffering. And then how we identify ourselves. I'm come here to enlighten. You know, I'm not come here to do this. Because we personalize. We put, it's always me and mine. So if we take away the me and mine, it's just doing. But we always put in the me and mine. So how the attachment come in? We identify who we are. We have to live up to the image who we are. And this is, I can really see, especially by bringing up my son, one of the insights that I learned is that the moment I identify myself that I'm the mother, the moment I have the barrier between myself and my son, because that is the identity of a mother. Then a mother is to have the authority, you know. Then he has to listen to what I said. And I started to, you know, I have to control, you know, become a control freak. A control, you know, want him to do what, you know, I want him to do, you know. And I can see that, and I realized that that is not really love. A true love that is without the barrier, have no separation. The moment we identify ourselves, that is the separation. So we don't have the openness and the connectedness to other beings. So this is the kindness and compassion. They really give us the happiness. So because we close up, and actually this sense of self really gives us lots of suffering. And I can really see that the sense of self creates a lot of suffering. Then we really bother so much how other people to look at us and how, you know, and think of us. And we have to live up to other people's expectation. And we don't have to. And I remember that someone asked me a question. She said, you know, you're going to Dhammaloka to give a talk, especially, you know, when you've been asked the questions, like, you know, it's quite challenging, you know, and sometimes, like, you can't answer the questions, you know. I said, no. I said, I'm not worried about that. I said, it's as simple as that. If someone asked me a question I don't know, I just said that I don't know. It's just as simple. I don't have to pretend that I know. Because I learned that, you know, by bringing up my son, because I've been challenged. Like being a parent, you pretend that you know everything. Then actually I realized that I don't have to know everything. You know, that is the really insight that I learned that, you know, it's fine. So, and sometimes we pretend that we know. Sometimes the parents, that when they're being challenged by the children and they don't know, they get upset. And they say, don't ask, you know, just do as I told, you know. This come from the sense of self, the ego. And it's really helped me a lot, actually, that to work through that and to letting go the sense of self, the me and mine. And we become a control freak. We control, you know, we because of this identity, because of this sense of self, this big ego, we control our partners, we control our children, we control everything. And even sometimes we sit in the car also, we control. You know, become a backseat driver. You know, try to control the other person driving. And it's also remind me one of the jokes, you know, that one morning, this man, he went into the kitchen. The wife was preparing breakfast. And she was preparing breakfast. And this the husband, you know, rushed into the kitchen. He said, too many eggs, too many eggs. You fry too many eggs at one time. And it's going to stick. please turn the eggs. You know, it's going to stick. And you add more butter. Not enough of butter. I told you already how many times that you put more butter. You see, not enough of butter. Oh, my God. It's not enough of butter. Where are we going to get more butter? Salt the egg. Remember to salt the egg. And put salt. And the wife look at him, turn around, look at him. I'm only, you know, frying a couple of eggs. Why are you, you know, shouting at me, you know, telling me that, you know? Then he said, and then the husband told the wife, he said, I just want to make you understand that, you know, when I was driving, this is how I feel light. And this is how we cause lots of suffering, you know, to others and to ourselves, you know. And we without investigate. Actually, the Buddha encourages us to investigate where the suffering come from. We always think that suffering is coming from others. He said, oh, because of this person that make me, they are the one make me unhappy. They are the one make me angry. And actually, missing the point. The point is, how you relate, you know, to this moment, how we react, to look at our own reaction to this moment, rather than to think that the problem is that person or this person is outside the situation. We can't change the situation. You know, we can't change everybody around us. You just imagine, you know, like I'm in the monastery, you know, we come from a different background, different conditioning. Everybody is so different. If I try to change Venerable Nirodha and I try to change, you know, Samaneri Gotami, Samaneri Upeka or Anakarikalin, I'd be busy, you know. You can't change the situation outside. So it's much easier that we change ourselves, our attitude to look at things. We always have two sides of looking at things, you know. We can choose, you know, to how to relate. Do we want to relate to this moment? With kindness or compassion, or with this negativity. We have a choice. And we are very fortunate that we have this whole path of practice. That is the ending of the suffering. So we take up the whole path of practice. So by keeping the precepts, that is the Buddha layout, that is practice generosity, keeping the precepts, and cultivation of the mind, because you need to have this to have the calm mind. So you have to have the morality as the foundation. So just being for the whole path of this Buddhist practice, just being a good person is not good enough. So we have to cultivate the mind. To just being a peaceful and calm person is not good enough. Because when you are peaceful and you sit in meditation, when you come up from meditation, we are still bound by great hatred and delusion. Maybe that moment we sit, we are peaceful, we are happy. But when we come out, we're still bound by that. So then we have to go to deeper. That is to develop this wisdom. So when we have the wisdom, then we can see things as they really are. Then we started to investigate. We started to see how much this sense of self, this ego, bring us this problem, a lot of problem, you know, that we've been, you know, create a lot of unnecessary problem. It's just like the Buddha said that we have these two arrows. You know, when we've been struck by an arrow, you know, the pain. Like enlightenment, they just know that this is pain. But unenlightened beings, you know, we put another arrow, you know, we poke ourselves, you know, a few more times. And we have more suffering because we hold on to it and we want it to be otherwise. So letting go actually is letting things be. So we accept it. We come to the place of acceptance. So that's why it's important we take up the whole path of practice, that is the cultivation of the mind, keeping of the precepts, and there is a whole path of practice. It's not only sitting on the cushion, it's not good enough, but the whole path of practice, because when we have the morality, so it gives rise to this we have this non-remorse. When we have this non-remorse, we have the gladness. When we have the gladness, then we have this energy. We have this rapture. We have this happiness. Then we have tranquility of the body and mind. Then we have this stillness. When we have the stillness, we have the clarity of the mind. Then we can see things as they really are. We have that is where the wisdom arises. So even those the being a good person, the morality itself is not an end of itself, but it's essential. It's important. We need to have that as a basic, as a foundation. And even those just being a calm person is not an end of itself, but it's essential, it's important, we need that. This is the whole path of practice. And this, I offer this for your reflections. I wish this teaching be of benefit to all of you and to help you to create more happiness and to be a happy person and to freedom and also ending of all sufferings. So is there any questions or comments? No? Is everybody happy? It seems that everybody, all the customers is satisfied. So no comments and no questions.